You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the 44th episode European Legacy Masters by the Numbers with Tom the Decker of
In Response,
a Legacy Podcast.
I'm Philip Klein.
I am Daniel.
And I'm Peter Plank.
And we're talking about Legacy.
Most of the time.
And this time we talk about the European Legacy Masters. but at first we will shout out our Patreons. Matt Duncan and Christian Neutz. Thank you for contributing to our podcast and for keeping the lights running.
Thank you very much.
And Peter, yeah. How's it going? What happens in your life?
What happens in my life? Yeah. Basically, as a running gag, always university. But recently I discovered back into a little bit of gaming. I've joined Marvel Snap, if you know it. It's a small card game from Marvel, which is eating a lot of time. And I've coming back to an old favorite of mine, Heroes of Might and Magic 3. Do you know the game?
Yes.
It's an old school classic game. I really, really like it. Started playing it, watching shit ton of videos. And yeah, basically that's my life in the last 3 weeks. So what's up to you, Phil?
Oh my god, I sold my soul. If anybody follows me on Twitter, they already know I've sold my soul to Delver, and I'm rocking it. It basically single-handedly ended my losing streak from half a year going 1-3 all the time to going 3-1 in the first event, 3-1 in the second event, then top 18, our little quote-unquote big legacy that we had at JKU Games. Well, it's treating me well. So yeah, that's happening magic-wise. Probably rocking the blue dragon all the time for the foreseeable future. Besides that, the ELM is pretty soon now. So it's in about 3 weeks. 3 weeks
from now.
And there's a shit ton of work to do. But I'm pretty hyped. I'm so glad to be there, to be in Bologna on the 3rd of December, and to bring you some great content. And for that, yeah, I think that's what's happened at the most in my life at the moment.
Sounds good.
What about you, Daniel?
Well, I'm completely overloaded with work at the moment, and I feel very bad because I don't get to spend a lot of time for Magic, and I've kind of been detached for a while. I'm finishing my PhD right now, and therefore I don't have time for it all. But I ordered some retroframed artifacts, which is some nice bling for my collections at the end. So, and yeah, after next week I will definitely have more time for Magic again, and I'm very excited for this episode, especially because, speaking of this all new Elm, of course, event, there is definitely some news, and I am personally also one of the people that might have some interesting questions about this, and I hope that we can answer this, and this might be with our special guest that we want to introduce now to you guys. It is Tom de Decker from Belgium. So welcome, Tom.
Hello, greetings from Belgium. So great to be here, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. We certainly are also very, very happy that you took the time and wanted to talk to us, let's say, in response, guys, about this Elm project. But before we jump into the project itself, I think it might be interesting for our listeners what basically makes you Tom the Decker as the name as it is. So why don't you tell us something about you?
Yeah, so I'm a 36-year-old Magic player from Belgium. I've been playing Magic since Mercadian Masks, so that's 1999. And I got into Legacy in the late 2000s, so around 2007. I'm mostly known in Belgium as one of the people behind the Belgian Legacy Cup, which is basically our Belgian equivalent of the Belgian Nationals. It's been going since 2008, and I'm essentially running it since, I think, about 2014. And by running it, it means that I do the website for the Belgian Legacy Cup, I do the Facebook. At the start of the season, I sit together with organizers to basically plan out the season. And then for the finals, I make sure that there's promotion, I make sure there's prizes, and I get everybody hyped up. So I'm kind of the community coordinator, and I do this together with Outpost, which is a Belgian game store chain, who's the main sponsor of the event and also the host of most of the qualifiers. Aside from that, I'm also a very passionate Vintage player. I got into Vintage around, I think, 2011. And then back in the day, that was kind of a normal thing to do. Like, if you were into Legacy, you already got some of the cards, and you saved up a little bit more, and then you just dove into Vintage. So it was a crazy time. And so in the mid-2010s, I kind of managed to make somewhat of a name for myself as a Vintage specialist by placing well at some card market tournaments, even spiking a Legacy event here and there. That's basically what got my name somewhat on the map. But other than that, I'm just very passionate about Magic and especially the Eternal formats. And whenever I travel to events, I end up connecting with a lot of people. And that's basically what got me into the European Legacy Masters project as well. Just my big mouth.
Yeah. So as ourselves as well, I think. That works.
That is the curse of being passionate, I guess. But sure, it's been a lovely experience until now, meeting so many great people from just across the continent, all of whom are just as passionate as we are. So that's it's been a treat. It's been a lot of work, like Philip mentioned, but it's also a pleasure to do, and I'm really an honor to be able to bring something like that to the community. And it's all very, very sweet to see how well everybody's receiving the initiative and the nice reactions on Twitter and the invites to podcasts even.
Yeah, certainly you're doing the heavy lifting here of the reps and of the ELM project with all the work behind the website and the blog post. It's really extremely.
Some of that is just experience from the Belgian Legacy Cup, because as I was doing my little story about that, you may see some parallels between what we did in Belgium and then what finally ended up being the European Legacy Masters. It's in some regards mirrors it. And so from the communication side, that's what I was doing the whole time. It was on Facebook and a website. Now we basically moved to Twitter instead to go with the times. But getting up the website was something I had some experience with. And when you need the work getting done, some guy with some experience is sometimes all it needs.
True, yeah. And you know what works, and you can use that to our all advantage now. And this is very, very nicely done, I think. And very important that a lot of people get to know the Elm. This is one of because it is the first time now, it has to be advertised. And like you said, the spirit, the gathering, the get-together is like the spirit or the dream behind it. And you have some kind of equivalent to, let's say, a pro tour, whatever you may call it, where you have qualifiers. But we might get into this a little bit in detail. But you mentioned the Belgium Legacy Cup as well. Is there some qualifier left there for a seat?
No, so the Belgian Legacy Cup has evolved a few times over the years. When we first started it, there was no outpost, no big game store chain that was supporting Legacy in Belgium. But what we did have was basically four different communities who were organizing events by themselves, like actual magic clubs. The team I'm in is still called Magic Club Ghent. Sounds a bit archaic, but that's what it was. So there was one in Ostende, there was one in Ghent, there was one in Mol, and then there is a fourth one, which I just slipped my mind. Anyway, so it started off with that, and the whole point was just if every club makes sure there's one tournament every quarter, and then we qualify a number, we give away a bye to the winner for one final event, and we have five events each year. That was the whole point. But then as things evolved, we ended up losing access to the nice venue we were doing the event in. And as you may or may not have experience with, venue costs are kind of extreme. So having access to a good venue is like super key for especially a small series like that. So we ended up going for a sponsorship with Outpost, which also opened up the game stores as a place to play for basically all the qualifiers. And then at that point, because we had two to sometimes three events happening in each store, and there's three stores, the qualifier season ended up being a bit heavy with all the buys. It ended up loading the main event. So we moved to a seasonal standing where the top players from each after the season would get buys for the main event. And that's basically where it all ended when the pandemic hit. So at that time, we'd been running 3 years with the standings system. Mm-hmm. And so that was January 2020 is when we had the last finals. It was won by a Belgian player, Johan de Gruyter, you may know, from the top eight of GP Birmingham. He made the top four, losing mm-hmm. to Gary there, mm-hmm. playing Steel Stompy. He won the finals against me into 2020. I was on the 12th post. He was on Goblins, Epic Games. But so for the 2020 season, we never really got going because the pandemic hit. And so the Belgian Legacy Cup event that just took place in September was basically the first new instance of the Belgian Legacy Cup. So without a full qualifier season before it, without trials, just one big welcome back to Magic event for the Belgians. And next year we're gonna look into a new system. We're thinking of reworking the Belgian Legacy Cup to again include not only Outpost but also different organizers, and to shape it more towards some kind of nationals event, basically in function of the European Legacy Masters. But all of that is a work in progress. I'm talking to the various TOs in Belgium as we speak.
Sounds really awesome.
It's also a lot of work again, but I'm up for it.
That's what we do all the time. We're just working on community stuff. I mean, we think we're all in the same boat here. But yeah, where do you play Magic then? I mean, with all the work that you're doing around MTG, do you get to play a little bit?
Well, the last few months it's been rough getting my Magic time in because we also had our second kid, which was born in August, just making the infinite pile of work just worse. But he's a lovely kid, don't get me wrong.
Congrats.
But so when do I get to play? Basically, I need to schedule my time accordingly. So it's ironically been the big events, the ones I can plan ahead on. So I managed to play Four Seasons Spring in June, which was what ended up getting me connected to the European Legacy Masters. That's the place. I ended up playing the Belgian Legacy Cup, of course, myself. And then 2 weeks ago, I got to play in our monthly... Well, I would say it's a league, but they're just a standalone tournament. So once a month, there's a legacy tournament that the Vrolijke Viking, that Happy Viking, which is a Viking-themed bar in Ghent near the train station, run by an ex-level 3 judge back when there were still 5 levels. And once a month, they do a legacy event. We had 12 people last time around. They are also proxy-friendly, which is very nice. And I decided to play Asper Doomsday just to try out the deck. People have been recommending it to me.
Oh, yes.
And went pretty well. We had 5 rounds and a top 4. And I ended up going undefeated in the Swiss and splitting the finals against Mono Black Helm. Dodging Shield Red, luckily. Did not want to play against that card. Thank you very much.
But yeah, did you play the list from Dalibor?
Something similar to that. What I always do when I end up trying a new deck is I look at various lists online and then make kind of a combination of what I think fits, often with some personal tweaks. Like I still had Thoughtscour in my deck, which most people don't run. I like that one to go with Unearth. Actually gave me like a super sweet out to Narset in one game that it ended up mattering unexpectedly. Like basically I had Teferi in play. He had Narset, end of turn I Doomsday, make a pile, then my turn, draw Thoughtscour, pass the turn, after plussing Teferi, and then in his upkeep, still under Teferi protection, I can just Thoughtscour myself into an Earth and win on the spot, which I don't think the consider pile lets you do because you need to cycle more.
True, yeah.
So, yeah, it's that. I didn't run Shield Red myself because I didn't own the card, and even though the event is proxy friendly, I'm just fine playing with the piles and piles of Magic cards I actually do own. So I just ran Mentor and Murktide in the sideboard. Was sweet. Not sure if I'm going to continue playing Doomsday, but it was definitely fun to be the bad guy for a change.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Why bad guy?
Daniel is basically our Doomsday guy at the moment.
Well, I'm not good, but I really loved deck. And did you also get to experience? I was a little bit hooked by the list that Markus Ewald played. It is called Doomblade, where he played Stoneforge Mystic Package in the main deck. I think this is a very sweet variation of the deck.
I absolutely considered it. So. One thing you should know is that my breakthrough as a Legacy player in the early 2010s was with Esper Blade, which is to this day my favorite deck. Like literally Tom Martel list. Well, originally actually a Gospel Jesus list. It's a Dutch invention, but with Intuition for Lingering Souls and Cable Therapy, like put it in my veins. That's That's the ultimate Legacy for me.
I feel so,
And then at that time I was running Doomsday in Vintage. Back when 4 Gush was still legal. So you would think so many years later that Doomblade would be perfect for me. But I don't know. I actually think it's, just looking at it, I don't think it's the perfect side plan to have. I think game one, you don't actually need a side plan. It's just for the sideboard. Mm-hmm. And for the sideboard, you have a better pivot than either Shield Rat or Murktide or Mentor, actually.
I mean, it's mostly for flavor, but yeah.
I will let you know that at the Belgian Legacy Cup a few months ago, I played also Doomsday, but I played 80-card Yorion Doomsday with Displacer Kitten on the main board. So I'm not against tainting Doomsday with unnecessary bullshit. In fact, I love it. I just think Stoneforge is too fair. You need to do something a little bit more busted.
Yeah. Totally. But yeah.
That is just so funny. It just reminds me of when me and Gino, we were brewing around some funny madness piles. Basically, he wanted to try Cephalic Colosseum, but I was like, yeah, well, you can also play Yorion Madness. Then we built it and we played it.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're playing 60 or 85 cards if you're just removing all of them but 5 anyway.
Yeah, that's also true.
I mean, the kitten has nothing to do with it. It's just a very, very good card.
As a kitten, I just like myself, the name, honestly. Like, Doom Kitten sounds like a funny name.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Doom. I wouldn't call it Doom Cat, but...
But I think that Doomblade wins the war every time against Doom Kitten.
The name. You mean the name war? Yeah, for sure.
But having played 80 card and 60 card, I think I would recommend the 60 card version. Significantly stronger.
Yeah, I think. Sounds reasonable, at least.
I mean, there was like with Doom, Doomsday with Displacer Kitten, like brewing around, like putting in 2 kitten just to have like
this was also Doomsday 5 Markus to 6. Ewald, I think.
Was this also?
Yeah. But he said they weren't good.
Yeah, they're just bad Doomsdays with setup. Because you need the Teferi in play. True. And additional 0 artifacts. So it's like pretty hard to pull off.
The current Doomsday pile with just Cavern and Oracle is so compact, so hard to interact with, and so easy to basically get off because it's so little mana. There's like really no need to try any kind of weird different Doomsday power. Yeah. Like I get that people are excited about Triumph of St. Catherine, and the card looks absolutely stunning. Looks super sweet to play. But I think in my Doomsday deck, that's not really the path I would take. But no, more power to the people trying that. Yeah. I think it's Francis in the UK. He's one of the people pioneering that. So I see you, brother. Well done. Yeah. But not for me.
True, true.
I think that the Triumph is just a card that is a little bit more suited for like the Jeskha variants, I would say.
Yeah,
I'm not control. Really into Doomsday in Espa. Maybe Espa control with St. Catherine can work, but I don't think this is particularly a combo card.
Doomsday doesn't need any cards. I mean, they even get to handle Endurance now, and they just have Relic of Brutalities, for example.
Or you can just let your cards die, your Triumph die, and then your whole deck is exiled, because if you have less than 6 cards in your deck, all gets exiled.
Yeah, in that sense.
Or
no. But yeah, Doomsday is a good deck, but maybe we should go back to the topic, the main topic, let's say. We talked a lot about the Elm in itself, or we teased it a little bit. We should maybe get to know how we can actually qualify to the Elm. How do we get there? When does it happen? And like the basic facts around it.
Yeah, so for those who may have missed the message, I would first of all say welcome to Planet Earth. ELM is an invitation only legacy event that's going to take place during Four Seasons Bologna in beautiful Italy, of course. So Four Seasons is taking place from the 2nd to the 4th of December, and ELM will be right in the middle of that on Saturday, so on the 3rd. The event will feature a selection of players from all over Europe. We have 20 different nations who have set up a qualifying scheme. And so there's basically the main way people qualify is by playing events. So at the start of when we announced this project, we got together with all of the representatives from all of the countries, and we asked them to select events that were happening in the next 3 months that could be actually hijacked, if you will, as qualifiers for ELM. Basically, we wanted to offer a natural pot, give something extra to players who are already going out to play events. But then for some reasons, that wasn't really feasible, setting up a good qualifier scheme. For example, some of the like bigger countries like Spain and Germany, of course, it's not as easy as that to get all of the communities to decide on where to qualify and get all of the messages out. So for those countries, there's just been an allocated number of slots. So we said, okay, if you can give away 4 slots at qualifiers, select your best, and we'll see how they match up. And as a result, we have actually a really beautiful mix of, I would say, upcoming talent, and then like local unsung heroes that are just making a name for themselves, that are maybe really well known in their own store, but don't really travel much. And then some absolute ringers like Javier Dominguez. Like the Spanish team is kind of insane because they're all GP winners. The Belgian team has Sam Doms, of course, the Infect specialist.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to him. I know the French team features Fake Futurism, who's like a well-known player online with like a ton of results. And of course, the Austrian team, you guys have also won direct invitation with Stefan Schutz, who's also a total stats monster. So it's a really good mix of talent, I would say. It's going to be really exciting to watch.
Yeah, the whole event looks extremely stacked, and I'm so so curious what the top 8 will be.
Yeah.
If some of the unsung heroes or the local heroes will make it that far, or if it's just Kai Savatari, Javier Dominguez, Andrea Mengucci, and Gary Campbell, Sam Damsen.
Eric Vogt, and many, many more to come.
This is so insane.
For me, this sounds like a really, really nice project where there's not a lot of like steps involved to reach this kind of dense quality of people, let's say, if I can phrase it that way. So we can have local guys qualifying with a local event and then traveling to Bologna and sit next to Andrea Mengucci, Javi Dominguez, whatever, and have a kind of a proto feeling.
Yeah.
Without too much effort. I mean, of course, you gotta win the local events and everything. But I think this is what every Magic player is kind of dreaming of when they in the past trying to qualify. There's the PTQs and whatever and regional qualifiers, and I mean the steps are so huge and it almost felt quite unreachable. But this is now, I think, a very, very nice project that Europe has brought together a lot of people. And
yeah, it has a lot of old PTQ vibes. And when I say old, yeah, I also mean again like early 2010s when it was. A PTQ was like a local 100 to 200 player event in a lot of places, but there was one blue envelope at the end. If you won it, you get there. That was the dream. And I remember I didn't really go deep into PTQs, but I played some. I have like one top eight, which is in almost a 200 player event when Modern was really new, with like a deck of my own design. It's one of my first like accomplishments I was proud of. And those were really sweet, including also the fact that people would travel out to neighboring countries to go and steal a slot because Belgium had two WPN premium source or whatever they were called back in the day, right? Who got to do PDQs. The Dutch maybe had three or four. I mean, I'm not sure about these numbers anymore, but there was one in Luxembourg, for example, that for the longest time was like a little unknown. But then after a while, like cars and cars of people from Belgium and France used to go to that because it was this little PDQ. But before you know it, it was just as big as all the other ones, right? So yeah. A lot of what I see with the European Legacy Masters is a repetition of that, and it really brings me back, and I love seeing it. And like you said, it sells the dream that's kind of been missing from all Premier Play since they started messing with it too much. It used to be that if you won a GP or you top 8 a GP, you could get to the Pro Tour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and that was tough as nails to get to. And especially as an Eternal player, you had one or two shots a year. With all of that gone, we figured, well, why not do it ourselves, right? Why not try and make something that's not fueled by corporate greed and that is not really about the money, but let's just see if we put our passion into it, what we can do. And seeing it all come together is like a dream come true, not only because of all the reps, but also like major shout out to the sponsors, right?
True.
Because thanks to Four Seasons for lending us their venue, that means we don't have to deal with what is usually one of the toughest things to make happen, like have a good venue, have all the logistics sorted out. We just get to free ride on the back of Four Seasons. That's super nice of them. And then we have almost 1,000 euros in prizes, all courtesy of our sponsors. There's of course the Tandua lens created by you guys, which are just absolutely stunning. Like if any of the listeners haven't seen those, like check out the website. They're on there under the event details there. Totally sick. They're going to be the greatest collectible coming out this year. Forget all the fake magic stats for $1,000. This is the real deal.
I'm so excited. I simply can't wait to hold them in my own hands when they arrive here. Peter today had a little kind of breakdown.
it was not a breakdown. I was just confused yesterday in the evening after 3 glasses of red wine. Because I pulled up our basically email folder when we got the emails sent. And there were no clarification email from MPC
that, for the shipping.
For the shipping. And it was like being there. Okay, the last email was like 9 days ago. They said they will ship on the next or 2 days afterwards after this email. So it's like a week has gone by and nothing could have happened. And then it gets like close because if it comes, the post sent to Austria And then there's like, how is it called in English? The toll. There's like...
Customs. Customs.
Yeah, customs. Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Yeah, when they come in, it can get a little bit timely confusing when it gets too harsh. And then Phil has to travel downwards to Bologna. And on Monday, the cards arrive or something like that.
I just hope that doesn't happen, yeah.
But
for sure,
the status is shipped from NPC, so no worries. We just haven't gotten an email.
Yeah,
I would invite all of the listeners to send their thoughts and prayers to our shipment, so that it makes it in time.
And also all the qualifiers, or the people who have qualified.
Thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers.
Speaking of that, we have a nice point on our agenda that says qualification metagame. Maybe we should have a look at this. So how many seats do we have actually? Is it still 84? Am I mistaken here?
For the there's 85 seats. There's 85. One more special guest that we have yet to announce. That one's going to appear soon on all of our social media. Okay. Stay tuned for that. But the total field should be 4 players from 20 different countries, mm-hmm. and then 5 special guests who we threw in just to make the field even more sick, and also because they make a great publicity for the event, and we are thankful for them to them for lending them our name for a bit, really. The qualifying season right now has 1 week left to go. We mm-hmm. have actually Spain and Belgium as I think the 2 last nations with a qualifier. And I took the liberty of counting up some of the results. In total, we have... So you should know that some of the results we don't get immediately, so there's always some missing. I currently have 62 players for which I have confirmation officially mm-hmm. that they are coming. And 38 of those played actually a qualifier event. So if we look at the metagame from that, it's actually it's interesting to see, right? We don't see the 9% Wizards promised us from Blue Red Delver. So I kind of feel this was
just a mistake there.
Yeah.
I think we are in binary, so 2-2 is like something else, but 2 in binary doesn't make any sense.
From those 38 qualifier slots, 9 of those are Delver, so that's about just under 24% actually. So Delver is looking to be about a little under a quarter of the field, which actually is pretty much in line with, I think, the challenge data, right? The data the Legacy Data Project has collected.
Yeah.
So they settled also around 20% Delver. So I think that's...
We had 18% of Delver in our Austrian qualifier at the 3-for-1. So it checks also out from the...
Yeah, so when people try to win, when people want to try hard, 1 in 5 is going to choose Delver is what it seems. Yeah. Now, with these numbers, one should always note that these are literally just the players that qualify. So it's not even just the winner's metagame of top 8 players. It's often like only the winner that's included from an event or only the top 2. So it's really just the tip of the iceberg we're seeing here. Mm-hmm. The second most popular deck, maybe somewhat surprising to some, is actually Lands. So Lands has 6 players that qualified, which amounts to about 16% of the metagame. What's interesting is that if you add the 2 Depths players with that also qualified, that means Merit Lash is just about as present as Delver. Mm-hmm. So those are apparently the 2 big players. Wow. You're either beating for 3 or you're beating for 20. That's apparently the way the cookie crumbles. And then to counter that, you see basically 2 strategies. You see the 4 or even 5 color control decks. So that's Leyline Binding.
Yeah.
For you in our metagame.
The Lord and Savior.
Our Lord and Savior.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have some people trying to go over the top of Delver with Minsk and Boo. But in the end of the day, they're also still on the Xerox engine with expressive iteration most of the time. And then you have the people who abandoned all of that, and they are on Chalice of the Void, and that's the next most popular deck with just under 10% of the meta now, actually 8%. But it's already quite a step back from four color control, which was about 10% of the meta game.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it becomes Legacy at its finest, right? It's really a smorgasbord of 12 post, Infect, Elves, Maverick, Blue Zenith. There's multiple kinds of Oracle combo in here. There's the Violet Breakfast. There's the Blue Green Tot shift deck, who actually I just learned to qualify the second player. Shout out to the Swiss player, who one of the Swiss players in Bern. He took it down with Blue Green Tot shift.
Oh, nice.
Wow. Nice.
It's a very spicy deck.
Yeah,
for sure. So maybe that's the fifth pillar of the format, right? We have Delver, yeah. we have Marit Large, we have Minsk and Boo, we have Chalice of the Void, and then there's Tassel's Oracle.
Yeah. Standing Oracle for sure. Yeah. I mean, whatever shell it might be.
But it's cool having access to some of these numbers and seeing the different events. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the things I also noticed is that the UK crowd seems to be very, very fond of Ancient Tomb. If you look at the results from Birmingham and then the qualifier in Edinburgh and even Ireland, they have one Naya Initiative Stompy
mm-hmm.
player taking it, winning the finals against Painter. The other one was a finals that was won by Painter. Then one of their trials was won by Ancient Tomb with the white, was also won by Ancient Tomb, but was the white initiative deck, I believe. So if your opponent at European Legacy Masters has a British accent, there's a good chance they're going to start on Ancient Tomb, is my theory.
They probably start with Ancient Tomb, Mox Diamond, White Plume
Adventure. I mean Gary Campbell said it all over, a long time ago, right, for them, since he won the GP with the deck. Yeah, so
he won it with
I think Stompy.
Right? Yeah, but Red Stompy.
It's Ancient Hoop. So
you're right.
Were any of you guys there in 2018 in Birmingham?
Yes, yeah. We've been competing, but I think anybody of us meet Tip and Day 2?
I wasn't there.
You weren't there. And Phil were there, and we saw the crowd cheering when Gary won at the end.
Yeah, didn't you win Day 2?
Almost. I was kicked out of by Infect. Maybe it was some dumps, I don't know.
that's possible.
I played Storm back then, and I was 5-2, and I needed to win one more to get Day 2, but I just was crushed by Infect the last round, yes.
Yeah, I was already out of contention. I was 4-3 and basically went 5-3 also. Played that guy Ale back then. But it was such a great experience being there in Birmingham, and the crowd
was unreal.
Gary Campbell was unreal.
Very, they have a really nice community around him. This is very, very nice. And
I remember feeling sorry for the finalist. Actually, I think it was Gregor Kowalski, if my memory serves me right. Gregor is an amazing player with mm-hmm. a fantastic resume, and I'm sure he's a great guy as well. And I, of course, I respect Gary, and I love that he won it. But I remember, so Gary played four color Delver, I believe, like Grixis Delver, the deck to beat. And I just remember thinking to myself, imagine being in the finals with your deck full of one drops, with your opponent being on the play, leading on Chalice 2-1.
Yeah.
With the crowd behind him cheering, Gary, Gary, Gary.
Yeah, that's
and then
true.
He has to, so Chalice hits the stack. He has to acknowledge that it resolves. And the moment he says resolves, the entire crowd starts cheering. It's got to feel bad.
I see where you're coming from. Yeah, yeah. that's kind of a feel bad moment for him.
But I'm sure Gregor can understand as well.
Yeah.
He's had plenty of other times to cheer. And the story with Gary was just fantastic, right?
It was fantastic.
Brilliant weekend.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, to every winner story, there is a loser story. Yeah. So it's
true. There has to be one, to be. Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of the British team, I think they are the most represent the country.
Yeah, actually, they stole 3 slots from Ireland.
Yeah, something like that.
So
yeah, they stole 3 slots from Ireland. Then it's not technically a steal because the guy lives there. But one of the Danish qualifiers is also originally from Great Britain. So if you just want to go by nationality, they have one more. Our Spain representative, Lorenzo Tassone, did his very best to stop the British Dominion by stealing a slot at the London Legacy monthly. Shout out to Tasso, the real original pirate. But yeah, the British have multiple of their players went out to travel for qualifiers and they got rewarded. And that's just it. And I'm happy that they are here. The representatives for the UK also did a ton of work for ELM. So I think it's good for their community. They got represented well. And now it's up to the players to represent their nation at the final tournament.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think we can shout out to Sahar Mihadi, who is responsible for a little bit of European Legacy Masters hype right there in the States. So she was a guest on Eternal Turtles podcast, also at Elo Punters. So the Americans already know what... what to look out for.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, there's also Luke K, who's also a very enthusiastic member. I always appreciate how Luke tends to be, when we are sometimes having some heated discussions, he always tends to be the voice of reason, the voice of calm. He's going to take care of text coverage, I believe, for the event. So that's going to be cool as well. Shout out to Luke.
Definitely.
Definitely.
So, I think... for the last chapter of this talk, we have some AMA.
So, ask basically what
answer
I
me anything.
Is, yeah, I asked Twitter and Peter asked our Discord server that they should ask you some questions.
So,
first we have the aforementioned Luke K. He wanted to know. What are your lessons learned and what past experiences from the Belgium Legacy Cup or from other tournament organizations that you did, Tom, that would carry over to the organization of the European Legacy Masters?
Yeah, some of it is just technical stuff like knowing how to quickly build a website in WordPress, which really isn't all that hard, but it's useful if you have some experience with it. I think the experience of trying to work out different tournament formats has also kind of helped me when evaluating all the different propositions people come up with, because there's some wild ideas out there in the ELM committee. To be honest, I think a lot of the experience I try bringing to the team also comes just as my experience as a player, because I'm actually first and foremost still a competitor at heart. I mean, I love the game, I love playing, I love competing. So much of what I'm trying to bring is just trying to represent the voice of the player in me and trying to make the greatest event that I would want to play in myself. And I'm in fact going to play a qualifier just this weekend, the last one in Belgium, to try and make it. Wish me luck. So I'd say my experience goes maybe half and half between just my experience as the Belgian Legacy Cup organizer and just a passionate Magic player.
Yeah. And I can definitely shout at you as one of the voices of reason here, because like really, really important that you can stay calm, especially in an
heated discussion like we had.
in like a bigger field. It's always easy when you have like one or two voices. You can talk easily with each other. But if it gets to like... for our event with like 20 person in there, because we have like a lot of countries with a lot of representation, it's always like different opinions are on the front, I would say.
Yeah, seeing the collaboration between the different nations is really interesting to watch unfold, especially since some of the countries have vastly different perspectives on what the European Legacy Masters should be in a perfect world. Like some of them would like something that on the more extreme cases, they would love to see something that resembles maybe the old Magic Invitational or the new Magic Worlds, which are like super exclusive with only the very best names and maybe some Hall of Famers. And then you see especially some of the smaller countries that are trying to make it into something more of a really a classic Olympic sports competition where every country gets one qualified player battling for their flag and that's it, like a completely level playing field. And so trying to make a compromise between those different visions is really interesting. It almost had to be either a Belgian guy or a Swiss guy who would be the voice of reason or the voice of compromise. If you just have to look at the European history, right? It almost had to be, right? So I'm trying to be that.
Hopefully not.
I feel like in the committee, because I hold the keys to the website, that automatically gives me like some power on what eventually gets passed or not. But I try to always find compromise and I try to use the power responsibly. And I feel like I get a lot of respect and credit, which is easily lost and hard to earn. So I try and try and be respectful of that.
Yeah.
Perfect. So for the next question, we have a question from our Twitter. It's from Tom from Australia. He basically wants to know, how can we make the color black playable again? He said swamps. So yeah, I think he meant the color black.
Yeah, I mean, there's this really, really cool sorcery which costs three black mana, right?
That's what I'm thinking. Oh, yeah.
You mean like, Hunt to Turach with Fali out.
Compared to maybe a couple of months, so 1 or 2 years ago, I think black is fine right now.
Yeah.
It is.
It's just a combo color.
There's no
control deck.
Yeah, but it's fine. Black anymore. But it's fine for me.
Yeah, you don't really see Thoughtseize as a control card as much as you used to. Yeah. You don't see Snapcaster Mage Hymn to Torak or Snapcaster Mage Thoughtseize like you used to see in the days of Esperblade and, of course, Checkpile. I think there's a combination of cards that just make it really tough to do that. Like there's Veil of Summer for the combo decks. There's Uro, which punishes you immensely for that. I think Black did get some really nice tools. Like, I think Shield Dread in particular is a really, really cool card. It can be a pivot for Dark Ritual decks. There's some people going bananas with it, with, like, different wheel-type effects or Burning Inquiry. In Vintage, of course, things are batshit crazy now with Shield Dread plus wheels being a deck. So I think Black did really bad, I'd say, last year, but it's kind of gotten its foothold back. Maybe it's not on the same par as Red is, just because it doesn't have expressive iteration. But I think swamps are perfectly playable, Tom. You should just go ahead and
We think so too. I would agree as well.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And talking about playable, do you have a next big brew, either in Legacy or even in Vintage?
Yeah, I haven't really gotten time to really brew up new decks, to be honest. So the last two decks I've played have mostly been the decks you would find on MTG Top 8 regardless. In Vintage, I'm working on my next iteration of Paradoxical Outcome, which is a deck I love. But I'm for Bologna, I'm exploring different options because there's two Vintage events for me to play there as well. I'm going to play the Trios on Friday, and if I don't qualify for the European Legacy Masters, I'll play Vintage on Saturday. So for that, I'm debating playing an updated PO list, which I'm working on, either playing Doomsday in Vintage, which is super strong. I'm also loving the Squee Bazaar decks, but there's not much tuning to that one. That list is pretty solidified, and it's really strong. It's disgusting, and I love it. And it plays Squee Goblin Nabob from the set I first started with, right? From Arcadian Masks. Yeah. So I have a lot of nostalgia for that card.
I built a pre-modern deck with Bird Alive, Squee, Goblin Nabob, and Zombie Infestation.
Brilliant. Gotta love the Goblin that could. General Nuisance. That's a flavor text.
Oh, really? I haven't looked into the flavor text.
Yeah, the Mercadian Mask's flavor text says general, question mark, general nuisance, maybe.
Okay, that's pretty nice.
I guess I just outed me as a vintage boomer, but that's fine.
Ah, that's fine.
That's totally fine, yeah. For our next question, we have one from the Austrian in disguise. Or the German in disguise. I'm not sure how. From Niklas Holtmann. He said, how did you feel about Abdel as the new card in World Grudger Dragon? So the card is Abdel Gorion Sword, am I right?
It's basically a 5 CMC. It's 4 and the white. When it comes into play, you flicker like X.
Any number of target non-land permanents.
Yeah. And you make a 1/1 token for it. And it goes infinite with animate dead with a big board of 1/1s. And you can stop anywhere you want.
Yeah, because it's an ability.
How familiar is your audience with the World Gorger combo is what I would start with.
A little bit. I think I talked about like a half a year ago.
You played World Gorger, I think.
I played 4-color World Gorger like a few weeks ago. So I was playing Abdel in it, but I played a 1/1 split between World Gorger Dragon and Abdel. Just because I wanted to have the infinite mana outlet with World Gorger Dragon and the infinite thing with Abdel. If I have mana up, I can do stuff because I played like a shell with Baleful Strix and the Synthesizer to deck me and then play my stuff from the deck.
Yeah, last time I played Dragon was actually last year at Four Seasons. That was my way of attacking the, at that time, Blue Red Delver plus Death in Texas metagame when Ragavan was still around. And I played Bug World Gorger Dragon, so no 4 colors, because I didn't feel like I could build the mana base in a way that was stable enough that I would love, that I would like. So I have a big love for Dragon, so I guess that's why Niklas, who's also a Dragon aficionado, is asking this. In case you didn't know, Niklas used to play World Gorger in Vintage, where we combo it with Bazaar of Baghdad to bin it easily and then reanimate it. So he's actually much more of a World Gorger Dragon fan than I am. If I'm a lover of the dragon, he is the actual donkey from Shrek. He loves dragon. So anyway, what about Abdel? I think the way you described it, it's like a very good target as like an alternative to World Gorger Dragon. I wouldn't run it instead of it, not only because I think World Gorger Dragon is just the coolest card ever, but also because one of the appeals to playing World Gorger over like a classic reanimator is the fact that you just kill on the spot, no passing the turn, you just win. And there's like a dozen ways to do it. The way I like doing it was to basically draw the entire deck with... Wait, no, how did I do it? Oh, I tried getting Tassigur into play, basically, at the end of the loop. And then with infinite mana, you could mill over the entire deck and play all your instants at instant speeds. So you had infinite counter magic, and then you could kill with the black-green Witherbloom command, is what I killed with. That's how I like doing it, because all of these cards are like playable by themselves, Tassigur and the black-green command. It drains for 2, and it... Or it mills 3 cards and brings back a land. Mm-hmm. Or it gives something -3/-1, I believe.
Is this card already that old?
Yeah. This is from Strixhaven. Yeah.
Oh my god, the Wizards is putting out so much sets. I totally lost track here. Strixhaven feels like 3 months ago.
So anyway, I like Abdel in World Gorger Dragon as like an alternative to Tressalon, because losing all your permanents... Two Swords to Plowshare is kind of tough. But I would never replace World Gorger itself. Yeah. I think the option to just win on the spot is so strong. And it's the reason to play the deck, right?
Yeah.
Respect the dragon.
Yeah, it's just a counterplay to Surgical, I think. Because even if you lose the World Gorger, you can go for Abdel. but it's just a fail case if your plan A fails, which works on a similar level. Yeah. So, any new cards you want to acquire from the bro commander?
Yeah, to be completely honest, I didn't really watch many of the commander cards that got spoiled. There's maybe one that looked cool to me, which was Scholar of the New Horizons. If you know it, it's a white 2-drop, one and a white for a 1/1 human scout. When it enters the battlefield, it gets a +1/+1 counter, and then it has an ability that says top, remove a counter from a permanent you control. Any kind of counter from any permanent. Search your library for a planes card.
Is this the one that can combo with Urza Saga?
Yeah, you can combo it with Urza Saga, but because it removes counters from all kinds of different permanents, I think it's one of these cards that are just going to be more fun and more broken the longer it goes. So that's like one of the few cards I had my eye on as potentially interesting. But other than that, most of the cards that have been spoiled that I like are either the gorgeous old border reprints or just cards from the main set, because Brothers War itself has some cool cards, like the third-party Iconoclasts, the new Young Pyromancer.
Yeah.
Looking forward to playing with that one.
Yeah, and this set is so much that we have to talk about, which means we kind of have to make another episode for this one. In the near future.
Yeah, it's just all
it's like
quick and dirty.
I already bought a few cards of the new sets, and there is so much more to unpack there. It's with prototype as a new mechanic and many, many more to come. But we just need a quick shout out to the best place to eat in Bologna, then we can finish this episode.
Do we have some tips?
I mean, we have to ask Tom because he's the guest here.
I mean, I have a few tips, but well, first of all, it's just the grandpas and grannies at Four Seasons who are cooking. That's really the place to be because it's dirt cheap, super delicious, fresh made, and you support the local venue. So if you're in Bologna for Four Seasons, don't forget to, again, respect your elders and get some beautiful pasta alla ragù from the grannies. If you're in town... I actually did prepare a bit better for this question. I have one particular place I can recommend. It's called Trattoria Leonida. It's right in the city center. It serves, again, fresh pasta. I love myself some pasta. It's in a little alleyway. It's so it's, even though it's right in the center, it's not too expensive. It's really cozy. You should go by. It's delicious.
Perfect.
Shout out to Italians. And I'm sure I'm going to see Niklas in Bologna because he's actually staying in the same hotel as I am. I booked his room. So I'm already looking forward to going out to that fantastic place. Shout out to Trattoria Leonida.
Okay, perfect.
So I think we can wrap this episode up. Tom, where can people find you on social media?
So I can mostly be found on Twitter, and my handle is BLC_Tom, so for Belgian Legacy Cup. And then I'm also on Discord for everybody already involved with DLM. Of course, I'm Kabouter Melpier. You can find me on some of the paper Discord servers, including the paper vintage Discord, where I'm also fairly active.
Okay. Where can we find the podcast, Phil?
You can find the podcast on Twitter. It's @response_legacy. You can find me, as always, on Twitter. It's @findekmdg, PHINEKMDG. Peter, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me exclusively on Twitter. It's @unicornlord, but the O in the Lord is a zero. Where can we find you, Daniel?
You can find me as well on Twitter. It is @flyingdelvader. And in the end, I think all that's left to say is thank you very, very much, Tom, for joining us today for this episode. It was very great.
It's been lovely talking with you guys. It was great. Maybe one final shout out for anything else you want to know about the European Legacy Masters. Go to www.europeanlegacymasters.com. Also, check out the blog. there's some neat articles by me actually about the qualifying season if you want to learn more about the competitors. So that's also a place where you can find some of my content. Mm-hmm.
And I gotta add here, if you want to really be in the news of the European Legacy Masters, just follow us on at EU Legacy Masters.
On Twitter.
On Twitter, yeah. I know I had something forgotten here.
But I think in response, yeah.
This was In Response, a Legacy Podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.